On this episode of Book Talks, we'll hear from David Schwartz and Yael Shai, authors of Where in the Wild? Camouflage Creatures Concealed and Revealed, along with the book's photographer, Dwight Kuhn. This book is the winner of the 2008 AAAS and Subaru SBNF Prize for Excellence in Science Books. Maria Sosa, editor-in-chief of SBNF, had the pleasure of chatting with the authors and the photographer at the 2008 AAAS annual meeting.
Your book, Where in the Wild, was the winner in the Children's Science Picture Book category. David and Yael are the writers, and Dwight is the photographer. The layout and use of poetry in the book is very unique. Where did the idea for the book come from?
Well, Dwight and I have been working together for years and using his splendid nature photographs. And we had done a series called Look Once, Look Again, featuring Dwight's close-up photographs of animals, and another series called Life Cycles. And then we had the idea to use some of his pictures of camouflaged animals to do a book on camouflage.
And I think what was different about this book than David's other books, this is actually his 50th book, was whereas his previous books, which are all math and science oriented, they're all in prose, and for this book he and Dwight, as they were talking about it, thought it would be really nice to have poetry instead. And that's where I got involved, because I am very involved in writing poetry and have been since I was a young girl.
I think the poetry is fabulous, and there's so many elements in this book that work together. And I think if you took any one of them out, it wouldn't be the wonderful book that it is. The use of poetry is also a tool, I think, for attracting kids that are possibly would not think that they would pick up a science book. You're the poet, and
Well, actually, David and I both wrote the poems
and
did the science research, so it's definitely a collaborative
effort. Okay, all right, so that's interesting. And, and since you're married, how did that work out?
We're still married.
We're still married,
good,
so it worked.
Good. That's interesting.
You know, we sort of divided the animals up. There are some poems that I wrote, and of course, then, you know, David gave suggestions, did some editing, some poems that David wrote, some that we wrote together. So it really was a combination. We divided up the research. Each of us took some of the animals to do the research, and like any good scientist, before we even began to write any poem, we researched as much as we could about the animal to figure out what do we want to say about this animal in terms of how it camouflages itself.
And then was there something that, you know, in the research, some like thing that just struck you and led to like a poetic moment?
Or? Well, sometimes there was. I realized thinking back on it, although I never planned it this way, sometimes after thinking a lot about the animal I was going to work on, or Yael was going to work on, I kind of evoked a mood. I felt some kind of a mood, the mood of a coyote, you know, hiding in the brush. Mm. And the poem came out in a sort of as a mood poem. And other times, the animal had such a great story to tell, like the weasel that changes its coat from winter to summer and summer to winter. And then the poem came out more like telling a narrative.
That's interesting, because there are other children's books that are written in rhyme, but it isn't always that everything is kind of a distinct poem, which is what I thought was interesting, that it isn't like the entire book is just a book in rhyme. There really is a separate mood and a separate atmosphere about the poems and the pictures.
I think the poems also provide a lasting value to the book, because once they find the coyote picture, they kind of know where it's there. So the next time through, the surprise is gone. And the poem, reading that over and over and over again, provides a lasting value to the book.
We heard about a child who recites these poems while she's skiing.
Oh, wow.
Skiing down the slope, going blackish, bleeding, greenish, blackish. Skiing down the slope, going grayish, greenish, blackish tree. The colors you see are the colors of me. We heard about that.
Yeah, and I think that maybe some of the kids identify with the animals through the poems too. I could see that, and I wouldn't be surprised if there are some songs out there.
Well, one other thing that we tried to do in terms of the poems is we tried to provide a variety of kinds of poems.
Mm-hmm.
So different kinds of meter, We've got a haiku, which doesn't rhyme. We've got some concrete poems where the poem is in the shape of the animal as a clue to what the animal is.
Yeah.
So we try to really provide a variety in types of poems as well as a variety of types of animals.
Yes, and that gives it a language arts value, too. So this is a lot of bang for your buck in this book. Which was your favorite animal to write about? Did you have different favorites, or...?
I find it hard to pick a favorite. One of the questions kids often ask me when I do school author visits is, which is your favorite book? And I say, my books are like my children. Do you ask a mother or father, which is your favorite child?
Hopefully not.
I do have a favorite animal. I did the research on the red spotted newt, and also wrote that poem. And what I loved about that animal, for one thing, it was a little new for me. I didn't know much about this animal. I live on the West Coast, and it's found more on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And it's so unusual because this animal goes through metamorphosis twice.
Mm-hmm.
It starts its life in water. It goes through metamorphosis, changes, comes out on land, lives in the forest for a couple of years, then goes through metamorphosis again and goes back to the pond to breed and lives the rest of its life in the water. And I thought that was just so interesting. And it's even called by a different name when it's in its land form. It's called the red eft.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently for many years, scientists thought they were two separate animals. They didn't even realize that this was the same animal that had metamorphosized. So I thought that was just fascinating.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I remember when I was going to school at Penn State, my wife and I had were married at that point, and we had this small pond that probably came up to about our knees in water height. And we waded through this pond, and there was these red spotted newts everywhere, breeding and laying their eggs. It was just a fantastic experience. They were just all through this pond. They're an interesting animal.
Uh-huh. Did you start taking photographs of them then?
No, I wasn't into photography then, but we did collect some and take them home and put them in aquariums and watched them sort of complete their life cycle.
Well, that's interesting. So, Dwight, you have a background in biology and were once a classroom teacher. Did this spur your interest in photography, or were they going on at the same time?
I think it did. I did teach biology and chemistry in the high school level, and in the summers I had free time. And I had a friend who came from Boston that was teaching in the same school district, and he had cameras, and he's kind of got me interested, and bought a lens and a camera, and then a little while later I said, well, I need a different lens to take these kind of pictures, so I bought another lens, and just kept growing and growing, the 3 months off in the summer allowed me time to do this, and eventually after 18 years of this, it became two jobs. And so I decided I had to make a choice. I couldn't do both.
Which of these pictures was the most challenging to take? Or were they all challenging?
They're done in different ways. For instance, the crab spider was pretty straightforward. I knew that I'd find crab spiders. I just had to go out in a flower patch of yellow flowers, which the color of the spider is, and look for them, and find the right combination of flowers and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was pretty straightforward. Some of the other animals were chance. You're out doing something else, and I'm out walking my dog one day, and out 300 feet I see a coyote playing in the field or hunting, and the coyote saw us. My dog never saw the coyote,
wow.
But the coyote saw us and took off into the woods, turned around, and I had my long, long lens, snapped one shot, he was gone.
Wow.
So a lot of it's chance. Mm-hmm. The coyote's a chance. The deer fawns were kind of just saw them along the side of the road driving. The ermine was another one of those things. I saw this white thing moving in the reeds of the swamp, and up popped its head and took a couple pictures, and it was gone.
Do you take your camera everywhere?
It depends. You know, sometimes
not to downtown Boston.
No. I brought it to Boston, actually. We went to Boston Aquarium yesterday.
Uh-huh.
But So some are chance, and some are you look real hard for. And for instance, this past week, past month, I've been trying to photograph snowshoe hares and camouflage and portraits and so forth, and I've been chasing that all month, trying to find a good photograph. And just this week, finally got my pictures. So a lot of it's a lot of work, and you don't get anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perhaps we should say that the reason Dwight is photographing snowshoe hares is because we are doing a sequel to this book.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And when do you think that'll come out?
Fall of 2009.
Great.
And the working title is Where Else in the Wild.
Uh-huh. Okay, great.
That sounds wonderful. And subtitle, More Camouflage Creatures Concealed and Reveal, which...
Yeah, I think that'll be great. And one of the things I also think is really great about this book, obviously, is the layout. But also, sometimes you'll see books that have the information that for the adult, when kids obviously ask questions and you have no idea, in the back. Mm-hmm. And that's good. But that means you actually kind of have to do a lot of prep work as a parent when you're reading the book to a child.
You might not even notice that it's there until you've finished reading
it. I know. And I love the way here you can just kind of peek. And it's actually, you turn a page, and there it is.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that.
Yeah.
That was another innovation that we thought of when we were planning this book, was instead of just turning the pages in the conventional style, after looking at the camouflaged, the scene that contains a camouflaged animal, we knew that the next thing we wanted people to see was going to be that same picture with the background lightened, muted by Dwight in Photoshop, allowing the animal to stand out. But we had the idea of incorporating it into a what's called a gatefold, where you open the page and it becomes double width. And then right behind the first camouflage scene, directly behind it, is the the scene where the animal is now revealed. That's how come we came up with the subtitle.
Right.
Camouflaged Creatures Concealed and Revealed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's it's visually very clever, and it's also very handy. I love that about the book. When you read this book to children, what's the response?
Well, it's funny because with both children and adults, when we hand it to people and we watch them read it, I'd say 9 out of 10 people, the first thing they do is they go through the photos as a game, trying to find the animal. Kids always find it much more quickly than adults. Their eyes are so sharp. And some of them are harder to find than others. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to find it, then lifting the flap to see if they're right, and they're going through all of them like that. Then they'll go back again, and this time look at the poems. And it's very funny because we wrote the poems as clues to where the animal is. Each poem gives clues about what kind of animal it is without actually telling you what the animal is. And it's just very funny, though, that invariably people go through it once trying to find it on their own. And then they'll do it again, reading the poems, and then maybe a third time where they'll read the scientific information. So I think that it's a book that actually asks to be read several times in several different ways.
Right, right.
It's too bad we can't find a way to prevent them from opening. Looking at the picture before they finish reading.
You must read the poem before you lift this
one. Digital technology you could use. I'll say one other thing about the kids. They're better at finding the animals than their parents or teachers.
Yeah.
Their young eyes.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Acute.
One of the things we'd like to do is have each of you read one of your favorite poems from the book for us.
Okay. You want to start, David?
Okay.
And if you can just give us a little background about why it's your favorite, that would be nice, too.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm a person who has a hard time with favorites, so...
right.
I'm not sure if
okay,
it's
not your
my
favorite.
Favorite, but I like reading this one because there's a little joke or twist at the end, and... the kids always catch on, and what they have to do is fill in a missing word, and then I ask them why the word is missing, so you'll see what I mean.
All right.
After I finish reading Grayish Greenish. This is the poem about the tree frog, which we don't tell you in the poem, but on the other hand, when you're reading the book, you get to see the picture at the same time. Grayish greenish blackish tree, the colors you see are the colors of me. Grayish, greenish, blackish bark. I'm bumpy and blotchy, part light and part dark. Grayish, greenish. What do I hear? A sound in the branches that's coming too near. Grayish, greenish, blackish. Yikes! What if he saw me? What if he strikes? Grayish, greenish. What do I feel? Oh no! He has found me. I'll soon be his...
meal!
Yeah, the kids all call out, meal! You know, they know the word that fits there. And then I said, well, why did I leave it out? And usually some of them will say, he got eaten, which, of course, is what happened, right? And that's the tree frog, and the grayish-greenish stuff that you see in the picture is the bark of the tree.
Right.
And the tree frog is also grayish-greenish and blackish, so it blends in pretty well.
Very nice. Nice reading, too.
Thank you.
Okay, I will read the poem about the weasel. And the weasel is an animal that has a white coat in the winter, a little black tip to its nose, and a black tail. And in the summer, it completely changes color and becomes brown. And so this poem's about this wonderful animal. And the title of the poem is Silent and Still. I'm silent and still till I leap out and pounce. Even prey twice my size, I can easily trounce. To feast on a rabbit, a rat, or a mole, I stalk it, then capture it deep in its hole. In the warm summer months, my coat is dark brown. Then as winter arrives, I don a white gown. I can hide in full view without caution or fear. In this snow-covered field, I just disappear. And the last word, disappear, does disappear.
Thanks to the designer.
Yes.
Faded it
very
out.
Very nice.
Gradually.
Yeah.
Okay, and I am going to read the poem about the red-spotted newt, my favorite animal in here. And the title of the poem is Vagabond. I'm now a forest vagabond, but I was born within a pond. I hatched from one of many eggs. I swam around. I had no legs. I grew and changed to look like this. They call that metamorphosis. With lungs to breathe and legs to stand, I walk about upon dry land. If you should see me on a hike, you may think I'm lizard-like, but I'm no reptile. Think again. I'm really an amphibian.
Oh, nice rhyming.
Yeah, she rhymed a couple of really challenging words there, metamorphosis and amphibian. She found rhymes for both of those.
Yeah, not only are they nice rhyming, but also just the rhythm of the poem works really well.
Oh, thank
yeah,
you. I think that one of the things I like about this book, even though it obviously can appeal to very young children, the publisher puts the ages at ages 4 through 8, but it can appeal to younger and older kids because we have some difficult words in there.
Mm-hmm.
Words like vagabond and metamorphosis and trounce.
Right.
That are not usually found, perhaps, in a book for young children. So I think it can appeal to older kids as well. I know my 19-year-old niece was having a grand time with this book. So
yeah.
Well, as one teacher friend of mine said, you know, if you don't use those harder words, how are we going to teach them? So
exactly.
The opportunity
yeah.
a teacher
yeah.
has to teach words like amphibian and metamorphosis.
Yeah, and sometimes words are just cool for the way they sound. All right, well, thank you very much, David, Yael, and Dwight.